Thank you very much. Advocate, you are done now, isn't it?
Yes.
Thank you. I'm taking hands now. Honorable Luyenge, Honorable Mazone, Honorable Honorable Mazone, Honorable Khaula, Honorable Swart, Honorable Maria, and the last one, I'm closing the list, Honorable Kunkubela. I'm setting the time, 10 minutes, because we won't get any extension. There is voting, there are bills that are being debated in the House. Minutes rule of everything. In that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. In appreciating the presentation by Mr. Koma, I would want to first understand as to whether, since you became part of this process, understanding that today you will be here, have you ever received any threatening calls, security-related threats in your life?
Yes, just one threatening call only.
I think we have a responsibility to look into that as this collective. Just I wanted us to know that. My question, the first one, relates to the manner in which cosmetic massage kind of information were given to Parliament, as alleged by yourself, that the minister lied to Parliament. Were you part of the sourcing of the response to Parliament by the minister? Because the minister always gets responses from the relevant sections of the department. Were you part of the sourcing?
No, I wasn't. It was an operational, I think it was handled operationally by corporate affairs.
The Tegeta issue and the Guptas, are you aware of any other company that has connections with the Gupta family? And if you know of, has it got any dealings with the SOEs, including ESCOM?
I'm not aware, no.
As it relates to Mr. Singh, can you put it very clear, the role of the minister soliciting permission from the board for Mr. Singh to have access in the board minutes and confidential information? I thought you said so.
Yes, I did say that it came through a media report that the board, this current board, had asked for the minister to, they had asked for permission of access to board minutes and other confidential documents on behalf of Mr. Singh.
As it relates to the capacity of the board, Do you really think the blunders that they have made, is it as a result of the lack of capacity, or it was a deliberate attempt to ensure that certain families, they get enrichment out of the processes and opportunities that exist in ESCO?
The current acting chairperson said this new board, obviously including the minister as I stated, they are captured. And if you take it further, he says that on the 14th, before they were to be announced on the 23rd of June. And if you want to look at it through his prisms, or you want to prove his theory, you have a scenario when one of our biggest investors, DPSA, says, get rid of this man, or I'm going to pull the plug. But this board gets married to an individual, not an institution. And this individual happens to be totally captured. It lends to reason that the board is without capacity, because obviously there are no skills there. The minister still owes South Africans the explanation in terms of how did she sketch all these good corporate leaders that we know, we read about in the media all the time. She has totally avoided the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, where you don't even need to vet people. You just have outstanding business leaders. But she goes get people below the surface. She has to explain that. So they are without skill, they are without proper leadership acumen, and obviously they don't know anything about governance.
Out of all the misdemeanors that you identified, is there any instance where you felt, no, now let me be bold enough and approach the minister? I am part of this establishment. I know there is a constitutional rule by the department over us as ESCO. Did you ever approach the minister in any instance, including the chairperson of the board, about all of them or any of them?
I considered approaching the minister, but it all happened after my opinion. And I consulted about it because I know they will do anything to deal with me. And the opinion I received was that if I take it to the minister, because, you know, there may be governance issues there in terms of who I report and also talking to the minister, they may just find a loophole to deal with me.
If things might be proved the way you have presented, with more and enough evidence, sufficient enough for this matter to be taken to another level, would you be prepared to say, I am Mr. Koma, I am here, I stand by my word?
I take Parliament very seriously. And what I've presented here is to the best of my knowledge. If I need to firm it up through some kind of a legal process, I'll certainly do that.
Lastly, Chairperson, do you think by any means, in all what has happened, you have read about the perception towards the SOEs and ESCOM in particular, whereas you have this kind of information? Now, what would be your bottom line? Wouldn't you think that somewhere and somehow there is criminality in what has happened?
I'm not sure I understand the question, if you don't mind, please.
No. Let me simplify it.
Let's go under 2 minutes.
A minute. Let me maybe rephrase my question. In all what has happened, the conduct of the minister, of the board, the consideration that is made, and then the promotion of mediocrity in terms of recruitment of either board or executives or anybody, if that is done not in accordance, don't you think that is criminal?
Without a doubt, we haven't got, everyone is talking about all the losses that we have suffered under bad leadership, but have not really quantified lost or opportunity costs of the entire thing. The minister has a portfolio which actually makes her potentially a super minister, because she's in charge of the economic pillars of this country, but she has no clue about what she's doing. That's criminal.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mazoni.
Thank you very much, Chair. To our witness, I applaud your complete honesty. It is very refreshing. I'd like to ask you a few simple questions to start off with. In your time as spokesperson for ESCOM, were you ever requested or asked to meet with Salim Issa, any of the Guptas or G brothers as they were referred to, or any members of the Zuma family?
Not at all.
Not at all. You speak a lot about lies. And you're one of the few people that are brave enough to use the word lie. And you say that issues were lied about, and that the minister lied to us, and Anoj Singh lied to us, etc., etc. Were you ever instructed to concoct a lie to make something that had happened at ESCOM look better than it actually did?
Not purposely. I've not had any official say actually opening up to me and asking me to tell a different story to that, no.
Not, okay. Minister Brown, did you have personal contact at all with Minister Brown, or did you work through the structures of ESCOM and then to Minister Brown's office?
I only worked all the way up to the chairperson. I didn't go beyond and to the minister.
To the minister, okay. Yeah. Then I'm very interested in your information on the 10th, it's under 8.11. You say this also manifested when Dr. Ngubane pushed for the employment of Carl Niehaus to assist me with board messages on the 19th of May. With increasing pressure in the ensuing days, I pushed back by raising the risks associated with the decision given the Niehaus infamy. I saw it as a reputational risk and wasteful expenditure. Now, I agree with you entirely. If I was in your position, I would also view Carl Niehaus as a great risk. Why do you think they wanted Carl Niehaus to be brought in to assist you with messaging?
How introduced Carl to me, he possibly thought I didn't know, but that he's a veteran of the MKMVL. Well, possibly at the time I did not know that, but I knew he was associated politically, but specifically in terms of the MKMVL, at that time I did not know. So I wouldn't know exactly why, but the point for my position was that it did not make any business sense. That's why then I looked at that as something that he proposes as a value against the individual, against the core function that he would be operating.
Okay. In your discussions, you mentioned the fact that you were concerned with the Denton report and how the Denton report was handled. Now, we have heard before that the original Denton report was going to be released, and then many, including myself, many people pired the Denton report, and that sudden decision was taken to release the redacted Denton report. Now, I'm sure you've seen it. 99% of the report has been redacted. Thankfully, we do, many of us have the original report. But could you explain why you think that the decision to release the redacted report was so suddenly made?
It was a combination of things, but mostly there was a lot of pressure in the media and across various commentators. We were sitting with a situation when we were guilty, more so if we did not release it. So internally, we felt that too, but I think the outcome of that resulted from the pressure externally.
And then, obviously, I mean, you know, I have a personal interest in knowing why this decision was taken. You alerted the board to the fact that you felt that there was a conflict of interest with Cliff Dekker-Hofer. And plenty of investigational work and legal work was done with Cliff Dekker-Hofmeyer, amongst others, including the suing of me by Mr. Mashele Koko, as well as by Mr. Malesi and Eskom themselves. Many other cases were brought too, and various issues. When you raised this conflict of interest concern, was there a formal response given to you, and did Minister Brown respond to this possible conflict of interest?
No, I didn't raise this with Minister Brown. I raised it within our own operations, within my line of reporting and so on. So it didn't go all the way but obviously now we know, because it is Cliff Dekker that actually executed the investigation, which appears to be exonerating Mr. Koko. So essentially, the initial opinion had, which resulted in Cliff Dekker being the preferred company to do this thing.
Okay. And then, Chair, my last question. You speak at length and very honestly about your opinion about the 30 million rand, as you call it, thank you from the Guptas for Mr. Malesi, and you call it a well-orchestrated Ponzi scheme. When this issue broke, can you explain to us what the atmosphere at Eskom was like? Were people shocked? Did people expect this to break? Did people think it would stay a secret? Or was it known that eventually it would be made public?
Well, the sense I got was that actually some people were genuinely shocked, but it depended where those people were. I spoke to the chairman, Dr. Ngubane, about it. He said to me he did not know about it. So we'll have our own conversations. I'll say, look, tell me this thing. If just tell me exactly as you know it. He said, I did not know the quantum, but I knew there was an arrangement. So he signed off on the approval for this thing to happen. So he came across me as though he was genuinely shocked by the amount. But obviously he was not too displeased about the fact that this was going to Mlifo. I didn't get a sense that he was objectively concerned about the subjectivity of that related to the recipient of the particular amount.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much for saving me a few minutes. Honorable Khawula, just wait for me a second, Honorable Khawula. Go ahead, Honorable Khawula.
Thanks, Chair. Thank you very much, sir, for coming to the inquiry. I want to start off by referring to your own submission. I think it's paragraph 8.11, right on the point that has been raised. But on 8.11, which you refer to the tenure from the Guptas, you characterize the 30 million payout as a Ponzi scheme as a result of unrivaled performance by Mr. Molefe to serve the interests of the Guptas. You further say that the minister was complicit in your own assessment. And then if also you make a point there that after Mr. Molefe was released, Dr. Ngubane wanted to visit Mr. Molefe. He couldn't stay long, if I capture it correctly, because he had to meet the president. Now, I want to know, which president are we talking about here? And further, you raised the point of Carl Linnaeus, which you did not approve. I got the point that you did not approve with him. As a result, that did not happen. And I want you to talk to me about your own influence to forbid the appointment of a veteran such as Carl Linnaeus when the chairperson, Dr. Ngubane, had warmed up to the idea. But I want to couple that point, as I've raised that, you characterized the 30 million as a Ponzi scheme. That on the previous submissions, yes, I think the submission we received from Ms. Susan, he gave us a narrative that there was a decision at the level of the board, there was an intention to make amendments to the rules of the pension fund, which could be adjusted to suit Mr. Molefe. And it is presented as if as an acceptable, even though it never happened, it is presented as an acceptable practice because it was a decision of the board to amend the rules. But you characterize that as a Ponzi scheme, despite a viewed legitimate process of amending the rules. If you can talk to me about that.
Thank you. Maybe let me start with the last question, why I characterize it as a Ponzi scheme. From what we know now is that the very decision that was made to grant him retirement was actually a consequence of a non-corate members. So that decision, therefore, was a non-decision. So that is the first point of departure. And I think there are a couple of other things to look at when it comes to Mlife. This particular matter. How it was conceived, therefore, that he comes back to the company against all odds. I've already said it was clear, so we could have a foresight of the consequence of bringing him back, but we did. When, on the day when he was dismissed, Dr. Ngubane says, let's go and give him support in his house. We drive there. Now, you don't fire a person and follow them into their house. So that for me is a point of skill. I think if you want to argue different, you have a mountain to climb. He said after that meeting he was going to see the president, and we have one president in the country. So I did not forbid the appointment of Carl. I merely raised the risk. I would not overestimate my importance. I raised the risk of appointing him, that you don't ask for a person to come correct your reputation when they have their own to correct. Thank you.
The other one that I want to check from you, also the previous witness, I think the last witness that was here, she confirmed having met the Guptas personally in a meeting together with the deputy minister then, Mr. Ben Martin, and Tutuzani. And I want to check from you whether have you ever been part of a meeting where fellows from Gupta were part of the meeting and with other politicians that were there. And if you can remember the date and the venue where the meeting. I'm raising this specifically because you have said yourself that in your discussion with Dr. Mubane, you agree that the minister is captured by the Guptas. And as you were finishing your statement, you have indicated that a couple of people that were captured, including the Director General, of Public Enterprise, Minister Brown, is captured himself. So I want to check if you have ever been part of a meeting with Guptas and which politicians that were there.
Maybe let me start by a slight correction. I did not say personally Minister Brown was captured. Let me rephrase that. I did not say it's a point that originates with me. It became a theory to me as presented by the acting chairperson cause. And then I became very keen and I could conjure up all these reasons that actually show that actually this minister is totally captured. If she's not captured, she has to tell us. She has to convince us because she appears to be totally captured. So I hold the theory that she's captured because she's in the water, she's submerged under it. Well, of course, she says she's not wet. So I've not met the Guptas. I've not been introduced to them. I've never met them even at close quarters to even be able to tell, you know, them apart.
Okay. Coming to the suspension of Mr. Tsediso and Ms. Chilufele, they led the evidence there which has been submitted to the to the committee that there was supposed to have been a meeting that should have set on the 8th of March. And that meeting would say there was an agenda item which was phrased as an inquiry resolution, which was going to ultimately lead to the reasons why they should be suspended. But the board, having looked at it, it differed. It differed, they did not agree with the decision. As a result, the meeting could not proceed in terms of the internal decision. But then the subsequent board meeting was called where the minister was going to be present. And in that meeting, Mr. Tsediso and Chilufele were then recused from the meeting, and ultimately a decision was taken to suspend them with any proven wrongdoing, which ultimately ended up in a handshake. Now, would you attribute that to the, because you have referred to the minister as a person that is irrational, who lacks leadership, with poor leadership, would you as a spokesperson, having considered that as one of the features which you can deduce as poor leadership from her, because the decision was taken as a result of her own influence on the basis of an inquiry resolution which was disputed by the majority of the board?
I think you are complicating it if you go that far. The minister appointed Sean Maritz a couple of in fact, it was hardly a month ago. In the document that challenges the process of a particular executive of ESCOM, that which then became a court process, a document goes to the minister and it mentions Sean and all the litany of his infractions, including appointing his body from church. It goes to the, there's a message that goes straight to the minister. I'm not even talking about media reform, I'm talking about a court document in which the minister is copied a number of months before she appoints. So you're going too far. This minister appointed Sean Maritz. We have a Sean Maritz there, a totally compromised individual. We have a former jailer who is totally compromised, was appointed by this minister in spite of the prior knowledge about this guy's instructions. If you want me to go on, I can do that.
The time is over. Chairperson, to thank you, Mr. Cormann, for coming and being very frank and open with us. Obviously, those that you've implicated will have the opportunity to come and respond as well to the very serious allegations that you've made. But you are connecting the dots that a lot of us have in the various reports, starting with your employment, which was based on looking at the Public Protector's report, the Denton's report, we see the academics report, we see the church's report. Have you read all these reports, and has that helped you connect the dots?
Yes, I have.
So when you came to deal with the Public Protector's report, and I'm sure it must have been a great concern of yours that the findings of the Public Protector indicated that the then board benefited together and that is a serious breach of the PFMA. And to date, no criminal action has been taken following the findings of the Public Protector, which have not been taken on review by ESCOM.
Okay, if you can answer your question, that please.
I'm just, what is of great concern to me, and you also indicated in response to a colleague's question about the lack of follow-up for any criminality. In the Public Protector's report, there is a lot of findings, on facts, and one would have thought that if ESCOM disputed those, it would have taken those facts on review. We know the President has taken a small part of that relating to his powers, but the factual findings have not been taken on review and stand. One of them relates to the Tegeta contract, which the Public Protector says was a serious breach of the PFMA. That was sent to the Hawks and the NPA, but today, a year later, there's still no criminal action. Is that a matter of concern to you?
Yes. As a reputation manager, like I said earlier, the consequence of, a good reputation is a consequence of rational decisions. So if the organization is not sustainable because it is buckling under terrible decisions, you can't have a good reputation. That's exactly a huge concern for me.
Thank you. And then you made mention in your report of connecting the dots, paragraph 8.1, where you say Denton's report, Denton's used to eliminate competition for Corco. It is clear that the suspension of the four executives, that was Matona, Molefe, Marikana, and Corco, was not predicated on noble intentions, but to pave the way for Corco to be GCO so as to effectively execute the capturing of ESCOM. Now we now know last week's evidence that on the 9th of March 2015, Ms. Daniels alleges she was taken with Mr. Corco to meet Salim Essa at Melrose Arch. This is prior to that meeting. There she was told, she was asked how do you suspend people, and she was told of that suspension that was going to happen by Mr. Salim Issa, who we know is a lieutenant of the Guptas. So when you take that context, it corroborates exactly what you have said here, that was the intention. And here you say, this is based on the fact that the Denton's investigation deliberately omitted the individuals behind corporate governance lapses, wherein Corker was most featured. The three executives were summarily removed, and Corco miraculously returned to the office to become GCE. Mr. Salim Issa says, those executives are going to be suspended. Mr. Corco, you're going to be suspended, but don't worry, if I remember correctly, you will come back. And so it plays into the narrative, and it corroborates the narrative of capture by the Guptas. Would you agree with that?
I think saying something different to what we've just said would be totally out of this world and outlandish.
Then, of course, you bring the dots together, and in 8.7, when you say, I now have a better understanding why my opinion, which was a very sharp opinion, I must say, as a lawyer myself, highlighting the lapses of fiduciary duties in terms of the Companies Act. The roadmap to recovery was handled the way it was by the newly constituted board. I touched the Gupta collaborators in their sordid studio. This comes together if I consider what Mr. Causer told me in his home on the 17th of June, where Mr. Causer says the minister is captured. You never said it, you are quoting what another person said. He can come and say he never told you that. The minister can come and say she denies it, but that was told in your presence. And it again corroborates other evidence we have heard before us. I want to just put this to you, and this is the academic's report. And it says, by shedding light on the modus operandi of a network of implicated individuals and recognized brokers, South Africans are joining the dots. The information is coming to light that corroborates claims of a coordinated political project. Now that must come from ministerial level or from even presidential level. A political project of state capture has been underway, whereby governance structures have been systematically repurposed to serve corrupt interests. You give that exact example here. Would you agree that this is an exact corroboration of what is said in this academic's report?
I think it was a scheme which didn't actually have a lot of brains behind it, because we can easily untangle it like we are doing right now. Yes, I agree.
But you see, I appreciate the fact that it might not have had a lot of brains, but it has achieved billions of rands in what we understand to be plundering and looting in the country. Is that not correct?
I think
it's been investigated.
I think we woke up too late. The scheme itself did not actually have a lot of intellectual investment. We just woke up late ourselves. We trusted people too much.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you so much for serving me so many minutes for our later discussion. Now is Honorable Maria. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I keep it short. The most interesting part of the document I have in front of me is, and I want you to go to 5.6. And I just want to highlight this part in 5.6e, and that's Causa, said in turn a G brother instructed Minister Brown to cancel the suspension which Dr. Nugani dutifully cancelled. That's how he explained the extent of Minister Brown's capture to me. Dr. Nugani has confirmed to me the key elements of Causa's narrative, and more particularly that he indeed received a call from Minister Brown to not go ahead with the suspension. You will recall Minister Brown's denial of these events in the Sunday Times recently. So it sums up the whole dots connection, what we just heard now, previously, when you explained, and that's your full testimony on this issue, and you stand with this. Yes. Thank you. Then I want to go to 8.2. This is for me the most strange thing I ever heard, when a person is suspended and then even the current board approached the minister with a request to grant access to board minutes on behalf of Mr. Singh. I have never heard of this in my life before in corporate governance, and this is so unusual. So the whole board has been influenced to do that on behalf of Mr. Singh, and still, it actually served to be requested that way. So everybody was part of this decision to do that.
I think take it a step further. If I remember correctly what the story said, which was not refuted, so the story stands. So it means the facts of the story remain incontrovertible. So this is true. The letter was written by Causa, but it was PP'd or signed on behalf of him by Sathi Kaunde. Now, what is most important about that is it puts the entire new board in this particular thing. Sathi heads up a very important board, subcommittee of the board, the audit and risk. Now you'll expect a person like that to be the heart of governance. He signed it. You don't have Khoza's signature, you know, on that particular document. He wrote the letter, I instructed it, obviously there had been an outcome of a board. But Sadiq Gowden attaches his signature on behalf of Khoza, who was traveling somewhere overseas at the time when the letter needed to be effected. The minister did not actually say anything wrong with it, so it shouldn't end at board. We have a minister who's totally lost, because on the basis of just this letter, you can dismiss the entire board. The minister did not say or do anything about this. She has put her head down as she normally does until whatever hits whatever, and then she suddenly wakes up and says, someone has misled me.
Okay, then last, I want your view on the executive level, that's normally F level in an ESCOM. They are ultimately responsible for running the whole company, to put it that way. But simultaneously, there's a board that receives remuneration for what they do. So effectively, the board, as well as the executive level, is ultimately responsible for the running of the whole of ESCOM on behalf of South Africa as the main stakeholder in this company.
Well, I think the logical way of looking at leadership pipeline, or let's say working leadership pipeline, you can't have best board and have best executives when you have an atrocious shareholder. In this instance, Minister Brown. It all flows together, it actually flies together. A good minister would ensure that she appoints men and women of unimpeachable stature. Now, how do you expect, if we use that logic, you will have expected the board and executive team to perform optimally in the best interest of South Africans? Totally impossible. When you have a minister who has not answered about her lover, who's dabbling into the business of a company that she should be looking after.
Okay, this is going to be my last question before my minute is over. Did you at any stage engage with this, Mr. Molefe as the CEO of the company, and how did you experience his running of business?
No, I had the shortest stint possible. So at the time when I was there, well, when I joined, he was there, but he left. When he came back, it was too short. He left before we could have conversations.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Are you done? Oh, thank you very much for 7 minutes. Honorable Kumbubele, you are the last.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, Tatuko. I think a number of questions, Chair, that one would have raised have found expression in the interaction by my colleagues. But just I wanted to throw a general statement that actually if I'm capturing in your heading that says ESCOM's inclusion, deliberate, well orchestrated, shame free, entire leadership capability. It finds expression in a number of things that you're saying, because you seem to be articulating a series of non-actions and misactions, and arguing that those non-actions and misactions create conditions for Gupta objectives. That's the theme and narrative that seems to come across. And there's a number of things that you've said with regard to that. But I will just ask questions on the few. The list of them, for example, non-actions you've spoken about, what was supposed to be done to Coco, not done. What was supposed to be done to Singh, not done. But there's one area where, for instance, I'm not sure if you follow this. there was a portfolio committee where the minister was present, where she sought to say she had little role with regard to the appointment of the CEO. And the memorandum of incorporation did not give her powers. I'm sure if you have followed that hearing, you know how we interacted with that. But I want to hear a short comment on that.
I was actually present in that meeting. The minister actually quite proudly demonstrated the ignorance of her own role, because she did not understand the MOI, and you corrected it.
You are aware that when she said that, she was misrepresenting the memorandum of incorporation?
Yes, because you'll see somewhere in my statement I do make a case about how she has a very funny PR strategy. She either was misled or she did not know. That's a PR, or it is operational. Yes, it is operational, it's very important to her. When she's cornered and it's about the monthly spend at ESCOM, she'll say, no, it's an operational matter. But when it suits her, and when she thinks that it's going to make her look good, she'll dabble into the operations and forget that she actually normally says it's operational. She doesn't take the position. That's why she was misrepresenting it.
I want to repeat, Mr. Kovac, I've not come across such a structured, useful presentation. I must be honest with you. Useful, many other presentations have been here. So I'll be jumping to a few examples on the non-action and misaction. For instance, you are saying, that's my heading of misaction. It is alleged that Mr. Khoza instructed the rescission of suspension of Mr. Mabela and Kalima. How would you strengthen that allegation?
The head of HR has to come and explain and tell the truth, because that is quite a very strong allegation that he instructed the rescission of the suspension of those two individuals. So the head of HR has to come and explain that.
Lord of HR, that is very, very important. That this should be verified, because it speaks in a number of areas on the suitability of Mr. Khoza to be the chair of what of the board. Also, you are also on the 30th of March speaking about Mr. Khoza bragging on his role in negotiating the exit of the three executives, other than your word against it. Is there any other basis of strength in that?
It's a tricky one. I had to present it to the committee with all those pitfalls, that because obviously he's more likely to be, because he says he doesn't know anything when he's asked questions. So he will possibly likely say, this I don't know too. I traveled with him in the same car. We got lost looking for Kupek and whatever. I would not have conjured up that. So I don't know how he's going to verify it. He says he doesn't know a lot of things. I don't think he would say he knows this one.
The issue of Impulse International, the contradictions caught up in there, of the CEO first claiming not to acknowledge certain relationship with Coco's claim not to acknowledge certain relationship with the CEO, the stepdaughter denying knowledge of benefits and so on. This column, to which extent were the minister and the board aware?
Well, this is part of the report. This is part of my opinion, which appears to be controversial. This was reported in the financial mail.
question is that, do you think the minister was aware of these developments and these contradictions?
Yes.
And if so, when, where would you pay for that?
The minister will know about this because she knows about things that are happening in the media. She has a dedicated team that gives her what is happening. That's all that they do anyway. They just give what the media says. So the minister knows about it. It was reported prominently by the financial mail.
You seem to be critical when the minister, I think this was 2014 if I'm correct, when she changed the board of leaving Mr. Tsotsi and Kwaita, because it falls under your criticism of the low quality individual, either controversial or low quality individual. You seem to be categorizing the two. Understand? Do you want to say something about it?
I tried in my evidence to pack it properly. I'm relying on the evidence by, I think, Ms. Molefe, who actually made the case about that. So the point I was driving to is that it's very clear this minister has gone off the rails totally from that point to date to get us totally, challenged individuals. Then I delved down to talk about your causes, the current board, some of whose members cannot even be found on Google.
My last question.
Sure. I'm deliberately trying to interrogate the dereliction of duty. If you look at your summary in general speaks about negation of fiduciary responsibilities, either by the board, the minister, all that creating conditions for Gupta benefit. My last question is in twofold. What knowledge do you have about the 11th, 4 April 2016 decision by the board with regard to the prepayment? If you got other evidences, now that these behaviors have been creating conditions for Gupta to benefit, other than the Tageta, explaining your understanding of the Tageta transactions, other than that, do you have other evidences that these conditions, one or two, benefited Gupta's?
I think the meeting that you're referring to, in terms of corroborating it, we need to actually check the records, because it happened 2 days before a pre-scheduled meeting. So why would you have a meeting at 9 o'clock, at 2 days earlier than the pre-scheduled meeting? So I think there you need to get that record. I'm not aware of other benefits other than your targeters and so on and so on.
I thought you were going to speak about, because it's in your 8.6 where you say the alleged rescission of suspension of individuals who were instrumental in the McKenzie stroke trillion. A McKenzie trillion on records, they seem to be undisputably connected to Gupta's.
Yes, I think it has been a long day. Yes, I do actually make a point about that. When there's a rescission of a decision, which appears to have been taken operationally by head of HR and related officials, that then the chairperson intervenes and allegedly rescinds that decision, it lends itself to his own theory of him, by the way, when he says, I made a call to a G brother, he inadvertently implicated himself. He was talking about minister being captured, the new boss that were to be unveiled captured, but inadvertently also implicated himself. So yes.
Thank you very much, members, and thank you very much to you, sir, for coming before the portfolio committee that is conducting oversight inquiry on ESCOM, and we really appreciate your cooperation for this interaction with the members. And we wish you a safe journey going back to your destination. Once more again, thank you very much, Mr. Members, we are going to take a break and honorable members, we are going to take a break for lunch and come back, but for our guests and media houses, this is the end of the session with you, and you are also allowed to have lunch with us. Our lunch is just going to be 10 minutes. Is 10 minutes okay, members? Thank you very much. Yeah.